Hi, I'm Rick Bennett, host of Gospel Tangents. I need your help. Please donate on our website, gospeltangents.com, and click on the donate button. It can be a one-time donation or a recurring donation. Your donation will help us to create better resources to learn more about Mormon history. So far, it's been a labor of love, but I really need some help getting better equipment, better sound, that sort of thing. So please either commit to a recurring donation or a one-time donation. We'll take any help we can get. Thank you for your help. We're continuing our discussion with Jim Van Cannon, a counselor in the First Presidency of the Remnant Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We'll talk about Jim's conversion from the RLDS Church to the Remnant Church. We'll talk about how traumatic that was. Did you know that he has been converted just about 5 years? So literally from 5 years to counselor in the First Presidency. That's quite an amazing feat. You know, so if the church has only been around since 2000, were you a member of the Community of Christ before that, or?
Yeah, well, I was actually a member. We like to call ourselves members of the Reorganized Church because the way that we look at the Community of Christ is that's when there was the shift in doctrine, the clear, huge shift in doctrine. So, more or less, yes, I was a member of that,
okay.
That church.
So you grew up in the Reorganized Church?
That is correct. Uh-huh.
And then in 84, the revelation on women and priesthood. Yeah. And so what did you do between 84 and 2000?
Oh, goodness. Tried to sift through the ashes of what felt like a burned down church. I graduated high school in 83. So in 84, it was like, what just happened? You know, because I was right there in Independence, and so it was kind of a civil war with spiritual bloodshed on both sides. It was just very unfortunate because there obviously were a lot of strong feelings on both sides. And what I was doing was trying to find out what was going on, trying to go back through my own testimony. And the one thing that held me so true was the Book of Mormon. It carried the same spirit as the Bible. In fact, it carried a stronger spirit, I believe, in many ways than the Bible. And what I mean by that was that I could pick up on just about any page in the Book of Mormon and read it, and you just felt the spirit wash over you. And didn't always get that out of maybe Deuteronomy or Leviticus, perhaps. But and that's not being fair, but that's basically, I went to restoration branches just tried to see what was possible at this point. I did look at the LDS Church, but because of my beliefs on polygamy and my beliefs that Joseph Smith III, as far as succession was concerned, I couldn't join the LDS Church. I couldn't see that being the path that I could go. But here again, met many lovely, lovely people there. So.
Great. So then. So did you have to get baptized into the Remnant Church, or how does that work?
No, we were all accepted on our original baptisms. So the way that we look at it is that as long as the line of authority was unbroken on the person who actually performed the ordinance, then the ordinance was good.
Okay. So are there anybody who was born, say, between 84 and 2000 that was baptized that you still accepted their baptism? Into the Remnant Church?
Yes. So when they went out and created restoration branches, as long as they held close to the tenets of the original faith, then we accepted their baptisms and even some of their priesthoods.
Oh, okay. So, that's interesting. So when did you start attending the Remnant Church?
I started attending the Remnant Church in 2012, I believe, is when I started.
Oh, really? Just
yes.
That recently?
Yes, that recently, yes.
Wow, and you're in the First Presidency now.
Yes. It was an experience where the Lord told me to go and join this church, and I was just told to go and worship with these folks and minister with these folks, and I really wasn't told much more than that. And at the time, I did not even have a testimony of President Larson and his calling to be the prophet of the church, but that came very shortly afterwards. I felt like it was one of those stepping out of the boat moments you know, the water was a little squishy underneath your feet, and trying to look forward. But yes.
You know, as we look at the early church with Joseph Smith, a lot of times he did take brand new converts and put them right in the first presidency. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So, obviously, you weren't a member. Has President Larson gone through a lot of counselors in the past 17 years or so then?
I guess defined a lot of counselors. That's a good question. I think he's had 7 or 8, something like that.
So they typically serve for a period of time and mm-hmm. then are released, and he just calls new counselors?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's interesting. So what is a typical worship service like in the Remnant Church?
So a typical worship service is that we typically have a prayer, you know, to invoke the Spirit. Then we have a presider, okay? And I think it would be similar to what?
Presiding elder.
Presiding elder that's over that service. He would be presiding. And then you would have someone who would be preaching, giving the message. And then you would have other various priesthood who might give an invocation or a benediction or an offertory statement. And then so the way the service goes is that the invocation is given, and then the a call to worship perhaps is read out of the scriptures, and the, you know, introductions, things of that nature. And then perhaps an offertory statement is next. We also have something called an Aaronic moment that we use, which is basically we have someone from the Aaronic priesthood give a 4 or 5 minute little talk on something that is basically, as Joseph said, the polishers of the stone, to polish that stone. And then from there, we go into the sermon, and then there's a benediction. And of course, there's hymns, you know, at the beginning and perhaps throughout, whichever the presider decides that he would like to do.
Okay, do you, I know in the LDS Church, we usually offer the sacrament every week, or the communion.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys do that weekly or monthly, or how often?
We do that monthly.
Monthly. Okay, so just once a month. And then, so do you have any program for your young boys and girls as far as, in the LDS Church,
right,
generally the young boys get the priesthood as Aaronic priesthoods.
Mm-hmm.
As I understand that, that's not an automatic thing or anything in your church. So what are some of the programs you have for your youth?
So we have an academy where we they can come in the morning. It's kind of like what you have, like, I think you call it institute, perhaps?
Mm-hmm. That's for college students.
Okay, that's for college students. Okay, for us, it's for high school students and
we have
older.
A seminary.
Okay, so you have your seminary. Okay.
Okay.
So ours is called academy. We also have youth programs. One of them is called FISH, Young Warriors, and then Handmaidens. And so those are the ones for the young girls and the young boys.
Oh, wow. Okay. So in our church, we have primary, which is basically from about 3 years old to 12.
Right.
That's usually held on Sunday. And then from 12 to 18 for our youth, the young men get the priesthood, the young women go to the young women's program.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then about 18... The men are either usually go on to become an elder. The women usually go on to work in the Relief Society. And
right.
You did mention Relief Society, so that's an organization you have as well.
We do. We don't call it the Relief Society.
Oh, okay.
But we do. It's Women's Ministries.
Women's what
we call
Ministries.
It.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So as far as seminary, I just wanted to make sure we were clear on that. In Utah, especially, because the Mormon Church is so dominant there, they actually have release time where you can attend a seminary class in replacement of one of your other classes.
Oh, wow.
And so that's either daily or every other day thing, depending on the school you go to. For church, and I believe that's actually in Idaho as well,
mm-hmm.
For churches outside the Wasatch Front that don't have release time, a lot of times they'll do early morning seminary, so that'll be a daily thing. So that's kind of different than our Sunday meetings.
Okay.
So as far as your youth programs, is it more of a Sunday thing, or do you have activities during the week?
So the ones I was talking about, those happen during the week and so forth. Now, we have something called church school, where basically what you were talking about in the divisions. So we have primaries, juniors, and then you get into junior high, senior high, and then young adults and so forth. And those are all classes that are boy-girl classes that basically teach the doctrine of the church.
Is there anything that you'd like to talk about that I may have missed?
Well, if you don't mind me asking you a question, because
sure,
I've always asked this question, I've never had anybody could answer it, and I've always been just curious about it, and that is that your priesthood starting out at, is it 12 or 14?
12.
12, okay. So starting out as a deacon is 12, and then moving up through those steps. Where do you guys find that? Where did that happen in
your
history? That
is a great question. I want to interview Greg Prince. I know he's the...
Oh, yes, yes, he would be the great guy to do that.
But so my understanding, and I could be fuzzy on this, but my understanding is, originally on April 6, 1830, there were six ordained, I think... one of them was ordained in a priest, a teacher, an elder. Anyway, I don't remember it all. But around the turn of the 20th century, 1900s, there was a real problem in the LDS Church with a lot of young men just had no desire to go to church. And so my understanding is the leadership decided, you know what, we're gonna use this Aaronic priesthood, the quote lesser priesthood. And I don't know if it is in our Doctrine and Covenants that the Aaronic priesthood is the lesser and the Melchizedek priesthood is the higher, but they said, let's use this Aaronic priesthood as a way to train up our young men how to do that. And so that's, my understanding is that was around the turn of the century, early 1900s, that they changed the program from adults being Aaronic priesthood to young men being Aaronic priesthood, and it started with 12 and 15,
okay.
16.
Okay. So well, thank you. I never knew that, and I was always just trying to find out what was it. I didn't know if you had a revelation from Joseph or something that we did not know about. Or
no, it's been kind of funny because, to be honest, I would say 80 to 90% of most Mormons don't know that story either.
So, well, and I have found, I've talked to a number of people that didn't know that, but there's that, you know, and they shouldn't be blamed. There's a lot to know.
Yeah, well, and it is funny because I can remember as a young man, and they would say, you know, a teacher's job is, which is in section 20, is to expound and to look over the church. And I remember thinking, I'm 14. I can't, you know, really? I'm supposed to do this? It is at 14 that we do allow our young men to participate in home teaching. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that
we have something very similar.
Yeah. So my son actually has just started home teaching with me.
Okay.
He's 14 now. So that's been kind of fun to go with him. But yeah, I can remember as a youth looking at that section and saying, you know, this doesn't seem like what a 12-year-old should be doing. But because yeah. Originally it wasn't. These were adult callings, but that's kind of how the change came forth.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, because you answered my other question about that, because that was some of the things that we looked at, and it was like, you know, how do you really have a teacher have a meaningful conversation, you know, and you know, making sure that there's no backbiting in the church and so forth at those tender ages, which doesn't mean a young man who is not grounded in the gospel and with the Spirit could not, but
yeah, Joseph was 14 when he had
absolutely. So I'm not going to deny that can't occur. One of the things you said, what we look at, we do have in our Doctrine and Covenants the greater and the lesser priesthoods, but we look at the. We've gone back and looked at the language of the 1800s. So we use the 1828 Noah Webster Dictionary a lot to go back and to understand what a lot of those words mean in the Doctrine and Covenants, because obviously the language has drifted over time, right? And so you're not always sure. And so, for instance, we view the Aaronic priesthood is not necessarily a lesser priesthood, but they have different offices. Or in other words, we kind of look at, instead of priesthood being, you know, hierarchical in this sense, we look at it more like this, that there are different functions, that each person, one is no greater than the other, and the respective importance, every one of those has, a deacon is just as important as somebody in the first presidency, if they're actually magnifying their call. We believe that, you know, that very much is there. And we also kind of believe in kind of an inverted pyramid as well. So, you know, those who supposedly, quote unquote, have that higher calling are actually servants to those who are of the lesser calling, if you will. But hope that gives you a little bit of a flavor for the difference in the priesthoods.
I hope you enjoyed our discussion with Jim. In our next conversation, we'll talk about the secession crisis following Joseph Smith's death. As many of you know, the RLDS Church started about 15 or so years after Joseph Smith's death. What's the RLDS perspective on this?
A number of people during the secession crisis had come together and they organized at the apostle level, so the second presidency level, if you will.
Okay.
And they had the church until the prophet came forward. And so when Joseph, young Joseph came, he felt he was compelled to come. That's a part of what he said. He says, I come by a power not my own. And he came to the church. It was in April 6th of 1860 and so forth. And most people do look at that as the beginning, but honestly, it was 1852 is where they held, arguably, October of 1852 was probably the first general conference.
Click here to subscribe, click here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some other videos that we've done here on YouTube. We hope you'll use this as a valuable resource to learn more about Mormon history.